I just cried.
This is National Council of Jewish Women Oral History, Mari Lurie and Shirley Salzer interviewing Albert Raisman on the 20th day of March, 1991. Mr. Raisman, could you just tell us your address, please? Could you give us your address?
5048 Fifth Avenue, Pittsburgh, 15232.
Thank you very much. And this is the continuation of an interview with Mr. Raisman.
Mr. Raisman, I'm kind of appointed to. I went over some of the things we talked about, and they were extremely interesting, but I wanted to get some more depth on some of them. And let's go back to the time of the IKC in the Hill, because as I recall, that was the hub of immigrant Jewish life. Many Jews lived in the Hill when they came to Pittsburgh. And I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about Anna Heldman, who was there, was she there at the time you were there, and the kind of person that she was, what kind of contacts, if any, you had with her?
Well, I didn't have too much contact with her personally, but I knew of her because she was very involved with caring about the condition of the people in the area. She also was concerned, and I believe she helped or at least started a baby care center up there, and her name was extolled. There's no question. I recall that they had a day for her, a Sunday for her, in which, because they called it the Anna B. Heldman Center,
right,
for child care, I believe, is what they said, and she was a very important person, and I think she was American-born, so she took over for the immigrants and helped them with their personal problems, mm-hmm, and probably with immigration and visas and passports and citizenship and things of that.
And how about English class? It seems to me that they had those. Did your parents, by the way, attend there?
No. My parents, my father especially, was well-versed and was able to speak English, at least when I knew him, so, uh-huh, and mother also spoke and wrote reasonable English. Dad was a pretty good English speller.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You also mentioned, when you spoke about the IKC, you mentioned the name of Ziggy Kahn and Russ Lander. You obviously knew those people.
Oh,
could you tell us a little bit about...
Well, Ziggy was in charge of all the gym programs, and he was very expert in getting the best out of the young Jewish ball players and swimmers, and was there all the time, and his name was synonymous with the Ikes,
mm-hmm,
when it came to physical education, and he was a taskmaster, but everybody respected him.
Mm-hmm.
He had wonderful teams. The IKC basketball team was involved in competition throughout the city, and games were played there, home and home games with other Ys and with other schools, I guess. They had some pretty top players, and they played there during high school. When they went on to college, they would come back and play alumni games and things of that nature. That gym was busy from morning to night.
You see, that's interesting because we often hear that Jewish children in public schools, when it comes to phys ed, they don't rate as high as other kids, which gives you the feeling that they're not as interested in this. And I wondered, this was a busy place.
Oh, it was. They were interested at the IKC. They may not have been interested in school. Maybe the competition there was too big, too great, and they just felt that they had a better chance to play with their own, and that's what they did.
How about Russ Lander?
Well, Mr. Russ Lander was an outstanding attorney, and he devoted his time and effort to the IKC. He was particularly on the board of the scholarship fund. I think I related that to you before. And he was really a very important person and was generally considered a top person in the city, both from Jewish activities and civic activities, and was an outstanding lawyer. He had was a member of the best Jewish law firm, I think, in the city, which was Berkman, Russlander, and so forth.
Did you have personal contacts with him?
Well, later on, when I was on the board of trustees of the Rhode of Sholem congregation, he was on the board at that time. And so we did get to know each other. His son now, Julian, is a vice president of Rhode of Sholem.
Oh, I see.
So there's a continuation there.
That's very interesting. Tell me, at the IKC at that time, did they have family activities
they
do today, where your parents and you and your sister and so forth?
They might have had them. I know they had them. Whether we participated, I can't recall.
You don't recall them.
But they had family picnics, and they had affairs in the backyard. The place was fully used 100%.
I would assume you drew most of your friends from that center.
No, I didn't, because I lived way up in the Heron Avenue district, which was a streetcar ride away. And I didn't get down there as often as I wanted to, but during my university days, I got a job with the National Youth Administration, NYA, I think it was called. And for 40 cents an hour, I would do volunteer work. And they assigned me to the YIKC, and I worked there with Harry Ratner. And I earned some money during that time.
Was Harry Ratner a group worker, or just
he was a social worker, top. He was the top number one social worker there.
At the IKC?
At the IKC.
Oh,
right.
Really? Is that the Ratner from the hardware?
Well, it's
the
whole family. His son took over. Well, Harry worked there a little bit for his son, and that was Ratner's Hardware, which is on Murray Avenue, and which has now been sold to somebody else.
Right. So you were in with the father?
Yes.
He supervised you?
I guess.
That's good. You mentioned the chairmanship. At one time, you took over the chairmanship of the scholarship committee.
Right.
That was at the Ike?
No, by that time we had moved out here to the Y. Yes.
And were you? Was this something that you volunteered to do?
Oh yes, when I came back from the service, I began to pay off my loan. And then within a few years, they asked me to be a member of the scholarship committee. And I think that primarily because when I came back from the service, within a few months, I began to teach at Business Training College in accounting, and then went on to Duquesne University, where I taught for 31 years. So because of my academic involvement, they felt I ought to be on the board.
I see. That's interesting. So you stayed on that scholarship.
On that scholarship committee, and believe it or not, I am still on the Federation Committee of the Scholarship.
Are there people who are around now who were with you on that scholarship committee who are active in the Jewish community today?
Well, yes, there are. Julian Russlander was one. I think that Gert Kaplan was active with me for a while, and she still is active, but all the rest are younger, I think, and have not taken it.
You also talked to us about a Hebrew Institute, which was then located in the Hill area.
Wiley
Avenue. And Dr. Abrams, Saul Abrams' father, I don't remember Dr. Abrams' first name. Did you know him? What kind of school was it that he ran?
It was a top-rated educational institution, well-run, always in need of funds, but they did the training for, did Hebrew training, they did bar mitzvah training, I don't think there was bat mitzvah back then.
No, but was the education on a general level Jewishly, or was it preparing you for bat mitzvah?
No, it was not. It was done on the basis of understanding Hebrew and learning it with a goal, perhaps, but not directly involved mm-hmm. as a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And Henrietta Chotner
was
my teacher. She's now a member of Rhoda Sholem, and when I go on the pulpit, I'm speaking or I'm doing something, she said, "Boy, you've come a long way."
Was it a big school?
Yes.
It yes. was.
Where Dr. the Abrams? Library is now. The Wiley Avenue oh, Live Branch is that big, big building is where it was.
Mm-hmm. Did you have much
across the street.
Did you have much contact with the elder Dr. Abrams?
Well, when he'd come through the classroom, he never taught. I don't believe he taught.
Uh-huh. And his son, Saul?
Only when they moved up here. At the
I see. You didn't know him at the other institute. Because
mm-hmm.
I just wondered today, it's a very modern school.
Right? Oh, well.
I just wondered how he ran the other place.
Well, the father was an outstanding educator. I think Saul is too. But Saul was bogged down by problems of location, problems of money, problems of not enough room and so forth, and the janitorial things and so forth, whereas the older man was not. I mean, everything ran quite smoothly.
Were there other Jewish educational institutions that were in competition at that time with Hebrew Institute, or was that in the Hill the place to be? For example, whether it was a synagogue that had a school as we have today, or...
Well, the synagogue that I attended way back then did not have a religious
Which was
school.
That
was a good of Achim,
mm-hmm.
way on Wiley Avenue. I sang in the choir there.
Oh, really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. As a little kid, as a little boy, long before Bar Mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
And they had no religious school. And I don't think most of the most of the synagogues around there had religious
they
school.
Did.
That's why they all gravitated to the...
I see. So it was really the community school.
That's right. I think
everybody.
So. I think
uh-huh.
so.
And when you became a Bar Mitzvah, were you at a good Achim or were you at Hebrew Institute?
No, I was Bar Mitzvah at Hebrew Institute.
Oh, you were?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
I walked all the way from Heron Avenue. My grandfather and I and my dad walked all the way because my grandfather wouldn't ride.
Is that your paternal or maternal?
That was maternal.
Did you have a grandmother too?
Yes, yeah, I think she rode.
She
had bad legs and she couldn't make it.
Uh-huh.
And I never knew my paternal grandfather. He was killed in the United States in an accident.
Did you have much contact with your parents in the Hill?
With
your grandparents?
Oh, yes, yes. We lived around the corner from my maternal grandparents, and I worked in their store.
Mm-hmm. Which was?
It was Heron Hill 5 and 10.
Oh.
On Heron Avenue, right across the street from the Pastime Theater.
Mm-hmm.
I had to work on Saturdays, and I got 50 cents for the whole day. I couldn't go to the movies because of Saturday was a movie day. For a dime, you got
right.
the cereal, you got the main picture, and you got a candy bar when you left.
It was a real deal.
It was back then.
Uh-huh. But your grandfather didn't work on Saturday then, or did he?
Yes, he did.
He did.
Yes.
But there were certain.
He didn't want to, but he did.
But what kind of influence did your grandparents have on you? Do you think they had any?
Oh, I believe that they had a great influence on
they
me.
They did.
They taught me caring, they taught me compassion, they taught me giving, they taught me the need to be involved, and I remember with the limited amounts of money that he had, he always made sure that he made a commitment to the synagogue,
mm-hmm.
went to the synagogue, and recognize the need for being involved.
And did it, you mean physically active in the community?
He was for a while.
He was.
In the temple, in the synagogue
sure.
only,
mm-hmm.
that's all.
Right.
But he
right.
was busy in his store mm-hmm. 6-7 days
right.
a week.
Was your father also involved in the synagogue?
Not very much.
No.
He was on the road. He was a salesman. Wasn't around that often. Mm-hmm.
Was your mom involved in any Wayne community activities?
No, mother was strictly a housewife. And got her citizenship. And remained a good Jewish housewife.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Were they socially active at the time? Did you have people coming to your home and you're going to...
A family was the focal point.
Mm-hmm.
My mother had a brother, two brothers in the city, and a sister in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And focal point was to come to the grandparents every Sunday for dinner.
Oh.
And they all came. They all mm-hmm. came except the two sisters from Cleveland. They
mm-hmm.
had children. And, it was a happening, an absolute happening. Mm-hmm. And the son and the son-in-law did most of the work for my grandfather's store, insofar as making sure he bought the right things mm-hmm. and put on a sale for him mm-hmm. and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And that son was Harry Weiner, mm-hmm. and the son-in-law was Louis Michaels. Now, Lou Michaels was married to Rose Michaels, and they lived on the Troy Hill. They had a big store on the Troy Hill.
Yeah.
And their sons are my cousins. That's Dr. Bernard Michaels and Edgar Michaels.
I see.
We were together all the time. I had no brothers, but because of the closeness of the Michaels, both of them are still very close to me today, Edgar
yeah.
and Bernie.
So Sunday was
the family
time, and you had a good time with all the cousins.
Oh,
you got
great,
to know them.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, when Harry lived in Ambridge and would drive in
mm-hmm.
every Sunday.
Did you have that with your children?
Well,
were there relatives around to come on a Sunday and your kids
that,
have cousins that, there?
That's no longer the scene today. One boy lives out of town, as you know,
yes.
and the other one is close
I meant
by.
When they were growing up. When they were growing up, did you have this kind of thing for them where there were cousins around, Bernie Michaels' children, for example?
No.
Didn't continue.
It so happens that my younger son, Duffy, is very friendly with Bobby Michaels
mm-hmm.
and with Bobby Levine,
mm-hmm.
who are cousins at that point, but the rest are
somewhere
too
else.
Far away.
But it wasn't a Sunday happening.
No,
this
absolutely.
Was a happening at
this
your grandfather's
house.
And Grandma cooked. For everybody.
For everybody. You know, the girls came in, the daughters came in, daughter-in-laws came in and helped and so forth.
Mm-hmm. It's a time to remember.
It was.
And
I have not forgotten that. We used to play stick ball and kick the stick in front of the store, you know, and kick each other's shins and so forth. And it was a happening.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody also tried to show off their abilities, whether it was singing or doing an act or this or that, or playing the piano or whatever it might be, or playing the violin.
That was performance.
I had violin lessons, but at one particular time, my teacher went up to my dad and said, "Save your thumb."
But your voice went on, from what you said.
Yes,
you went
so
to choir.
Yes. I still sing. I love mm-hmm. to sing, and I love music, and I love plays and concerts and everything. In fact, I have two tickets here for Miss Saigon for September.
Oh, mm-hmm. good. So you're really prepared.
That's mm-hmm. right. When they bring them, I've seen Phantom of the Opera twice, and I saw Les Mis in London and here, and we just, both of us, my wife and I, just love music. But my grandson, Noah, is a superb musicologist. By that I mean, when he decides he likes a play, he'll learn every word of every song. He knows every word
this
of every song.
Is your grandson
from,
in Pittsburgh?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Cats, he knows every song from Cats and every word from Phantom of the Opera.
Mm-hmm.
So he's really inherited something.
Well, maybe. My son doesn't sing.
I see. But tell me, since you were there every Sunday, were you also spending, and Pesach is coming now, did you also spend holidays with your grandparents?
We tried. I think always had Passover with my grandparents. Mm-hmm. Whether the Michaels and the Weiners and so forth came in, I don't know.
But you did.
We did.
Uh-huh. So that was a real yontif.
Yes.
That you had to do. Okay, let's skip a little bit now to what we talked about last time. You were at Pitt from 35 to 39, and then you went enlisted in the Army.
I worked for a couple of years.
In 41, you enlisted.
I enlisted in 41.
And you were married in 41.
Yes, July of 41.
But you actually didn't go in the service till 43?
That's correct.
I see. So you were home with your wife.
I got a 3A deferment. I don't know why. I think one of the reasons is because where I live put me in the Greenfield area, and they seem to have enough men coming from there for the Army.
Whereas
if you were in Ward 14 up in Squirrel Hill, they were short. Those people were taken right away, but I had a hiatus of a year and a half.
Uh-huh. So you had time with your wife before you
were off. Yes, we were married in July 41.
With your bride.
And came back, lived with my folks for a short time, and got a small apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I went to work, and then was called to active duty in February of 43.
Mm-hmm. And you stayed in the service till about 47?
Six.
Uh-huh. But you were actually discharged in 47.
Right.
Is that it?
Right.
But you had told us that you were doing some work for the Army back here.
From active duty in the European Theater of Operations, I was returned back to the States to do termination work
mm-hmm.
for the Army because I was an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
I was stationed up in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was late getting out. I had enough points to get out earlier, but they wouldn't let me out because they had returned me from active frontline duty.
Was it part of your social group of peers to enlist in the Army at that time, or was this just an individual decision?
I just didn't want to go into the infantry.
I
wanted to apply, wanted to be an air cadet. If they would accept me, I would go
mm-hmm.
with them.
This was just a whim and had no basis from something else that you had done.
No, except that I didn't want to be in the infantry.
I see. But none of your buddies did it with you, is that it?
No, no one came from Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. So you really went off, took the initiative.
That's right.
Okay. You also spoke last time that when you returned, I believe, you went to the Business Training College?
I went to teach there.
Oh, you went to teach, so you went to business training before you went into the Army?
No. I had my degree from Pitt, when I came back and looked around for a job and decided to do my own accounting work, and then when Business Training College called and asked if I would teach 5 days and 5 mornings a week or something like that, I wasn't that busy.
I see.
That was my step towards education.
I see. Was that your goal, to become an educator in business?
Or no, did it just not necessarily. It just happened to fall in and I needed the work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And all you needed at that time was a college degree?
That's all. They were so short of personnel because the GIs were coming back, the classes were standing at the wall practically.
I see. So you had the advantage of having
that. So when I made an application there, they said, fine, come on and teach.
Mm-hmm.
I knew more than the students, so that's all
yeah.
they were looking for.
And how did you, but the students must have been very near or the same as your own age.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
They were. But they were anxious to get an education. Some had been in the Army 3, 4, 5 years
mm-hmm.
and wanted to get started on an education. And they didn't have enough credits to get into a college, so they started with BTC.
I see. Is that still on?
It's now Point Park.
Oh, that's now Point Park.
The Dinkle Horse.
Yes. And then you said that you were called to Duquesne.
That's right.
To do part-time teaching there. How did that
Shidduch come about, that Duquesne would have come after you? Were you known as a wonderful teacher at the business training
college? I don't know. All I know is that they had the same reasons for needing personnel on a part-time basis. Pay was not very good, but I made application, and they looked at my curriculum vitae and said, I think you can do it. And I said, well, I'll try, and that's the way it began.
But it's interesting, they accepted you as a teacher at the university with a bachelor's degree.
Correct.
Which I don't know if would go today.
No, absolutely not. In fact, the university today, if you don't have a PhD or working towards a PhD, you're dead. But I will admit that some of the PhDs that I worked with couldn't teach anything. Worthless. And that I, from a practical standpoint, was able to get across what was necessary to be an accountant and teach it, and evidently I was all right because they never fired me.
But you were eventually out-degreed.
Oh, yes, sure. But I became a certified public accountant. And that was equivalent at that time to a master's degree.
I see.
And so they said, that's fine. Today, it's a different story. CPA doesn't mean anything.
Tell me, what was it like at Duquesne at that time? Was there a big student body? If you looked at Pitt and you looked at CMU and you looked at Duquesne, how did it fit
Duquesne
in?
Duquesne was much smaller, but there was a certain personal involvement that Duquesne, because the classes were nowhere near as large, no lecture class of 250 or 300. Ours was a hands-on teaching, and that's why the kids gravitated to Duquesne.
I see.
Absolutely. You know, there was religious training, I mean, and it was predominantly Catholic, but it got its full share of students at that particular time with no problem at all.
Was the faculty mostly Catholic too, or what?
I would think so, but there was not a requirement.
No.
Whatever your religious affiliation was not a requirement. I think I did tell you that Duquesne, they bent over backwards to me as being Jewish and asking me about Jewish holidays and when I'd be off, and so as not to schedule examinations those days. Those were they were very nice all the way.
And among the student body, I met you indicate or imply there were a lot of Catholic students. How did that, in terms of Jewish students, did that change while you were there in those 31 years with the student
body?
We
had a very minimal number of Jewish students. Mm-hmm. Not because it was a Catholic school, but they just felt that they wanted to go somewhere else. But I will say that any student that really was interested in accounting or finance went to Duquesne, got a very good education, and then we got lucky when Pitt, during the administration of doctor who headed the school and who was killed in the towers are named for him.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he decided to disband the undergraduate business school. Mm-hmm. And that happened. I mean,
they just
moved right up,
and
he just blocked it. Right.
Yes. What's
Litchfield.
Dr.
Litchfield.
Mm-hmm. But the standards also went up, I assume.
Oh, the standards continued to grow. We were under AACSB almost within several years after I joined them. Mm-hmm. And my first dean, Dr. Wright, retired, and then the next dean was Dr. Walton. He went on to become president of Catholic University.
I see. So they really did see.
I have a note from Dr. Walton congratulating me on passing the CPA.
Oh, really?
A piece of paper which he wrote to me. He said, never ever you see such wonderful news, because that meant I could stay on.
Right.
You see.
You got that degree there at Duquesne?
Yes. Well, I had to sit for the exam. While I was teaching,
I
took a week off and kept my fingers crossed. And then when I passed it and I got notification of it, I called the school and told, because I was homesick with some illness, I recall when the envelope came. And I was just so pleased, and I called the dean, and he got on the phone, and he said, no, he wasn't there. Mm. And then he got a message, and then when I got this back to school, there was a note from him congratulating me. Because from that time on, I had no trouble getting tenure and staying with the school.
Did you you had to have tenure then?
After a while, if they didn't give you tenure, it was obvious that they could ask you to leave at any time.
I see. How many were in your department with you?
About 8 or 10. We were filled. Our classes were filled, especially in the county area. We have a reputation. Duquesne still has a reputation of turning out the best undergraduate academies.
Is that their major?
In the business
at that
school.
Time too?
In the business
oh,
school.
In the business
in
school.
The, well, they're up in the music. And, but we had little or no involvement with them.
I see.
Up on the hill. Then, of course, during my tenure there, they built a new school, they built Rockwell Hall, and they began to expand all over the place. It's a big school.
But yours was the major school at that time.
I think it was.
Law school was there, too.
But I think we were the major school. Education was big back then, but we seemed to get the best students, and we seemed to do an excellent job. I think they still do.
You also mentioned the last time that you were the athletic chairman.
That's right.
And I wondered how the athletic chairman came in with the business school.
Well, they sort of passed the chairmanship around from place to place, and I was always active in sport, interested in sports, and I was very friendly with all the men on the team, boys on the team, and the coaches and so forth. And then I got on